Welcome to the Culture of Comics on the AMDG Radio Network. I am your host, Stephen Heiner, and with me is the one, the only, the magnificent, the amazing, Jason Frazier.
I don't even know what to do. Do I bow? Such a nice greeting.
We've all been bowing to you. You do a slight bow back.
It's a Jason world. You just live in it. I'm kidding. That's crazy.
Well, we are here today, Jason, in our series of wrap-up shows for the season. We are looking forward to the end of the year, the end of the season. It'll be a good time for our listeners to enjoy December with their families and enjoy the end of the year and think about some comic buying decisions. And this show is to help you with your comic buying decisions. Unlike Jason's extremely well-run Marvel show last week, this show is going to be a bit more ad hoc for the simple reason that we're dealing with at least six different universes. The Marvel universe is one coherent and fairly well-run universe, whereas tonight we're going to be talking about Image, we're going to be talking about Valiant, IDW, Vertigo, Boom, Dynamite, and any other crashing or smashing things that could be around. And as a result, we may not be able to put together a coherent storyline for you. But what we will do is tell you our favorite books from these independent publishers and what we're pulling coming in to the next year. And we're going to try to distinguish here between the 10 books that we would pull, and Jason and I haven't talked beforehand, so he may not have 10, I may not have 10, but our goal was 10 just so that each of the shows worked out so that we would try to be fair across all the rest. And if you think about it, you know, 10 for one studio, and this is 10 for six studios or publishers. That's just telling you how big the gap is between these publishers. And they would argue probably quality versus quantity. And, you know, we're not going to argue today. It's the independent show. It's all about the independents. I think we're going to start at the beginning, Jason, with our top 10 lists. And I liked how you guided us through our last show where we did two at a time. And I think that's what we're going to do. We'll do, you know, if it's 10, you'll do 10 and 9. I'll do my 10 and 9, and we'll work up. And as you introduce each of these titles, feel free to just take your time and explain to readers why you pull this title and basically why you think they should pull this title. And once we move past those, we're going to talk about limited series that aren't ongoing books. So if there are any limited series on your top 10 list, I would ask you to pull them out and leave them for our limited series discussion.
Well, my top 10 list is rather eclectic this time because There's actually a couple on the list, for example, that have actually ended this year. So not going to be something you can pull going forward, but it was a great run while it was there. And so I think I'm going to talk to people about picking it up in trade and taking a look at it because it was really good. And there's one in particular. But the interesting thing about independence is sometimes you just don't know if it's going to be a limited series. You know, they give it a try. It goes for a while. All of a sudden, it's not going to run anymore. So it's in the independent realm, it's more difficult sometimes, I think, to understand if you're going to have a ongoing book or not. And that's kind of the adventure of it, I think, sometimes. It's you just never know what you're going to get. There's so much possibility, and when we talk about independent publishers, there's a million stories out there, and there's a million comics, and we'll never get to all of them, I'm sure of that, but, man, so many possibilities. Now, they don't tend to go, I don't know, we've talked about this before, Stephen, how I think independent doesn't tend to skew to the superhero side, and when it does, it's a different take on a superhero kind of aspect. So you'll find some interesting things on the independent side, and I'm pretty excited to see what we come up with today. I'm looking for some to add to my top 10 pull list now, since one of those has ended. So I'm interested to see what you've got for us today.
Okay. Well, if you want to get us rolling.
Well, I don't know about that. Yeah, I'll get us rolling. I'll start off. You know what? I really enjoy this one. I think maybe my top five are in order. My bottom five are probably just, I just like them all probably pretty equally. So I'll start off with the one, since I've kind of got us into suspense here. I'll start off with my number 10 as the book that that is over now. It ended, goodness, it ended in, I want to say March or April of this year. It was one that I was reading. It only made it 25 issues, unfortunately, but it was also, there was also a million other limited series of this particular story. There's actually like five omnibuses out for this right now, and it was a book that started, you know, not too long ago. I mean, it was, I think, 2007 maybe was its first issues. My first choice for independent publisher, and you'll find that we've talked before about how I like to deal with, how I like gore and horror and all of those things. My first choice was Hack Slash. Hack Slash. Have you ever heard of that one, Stephen?
I have not heard of Hack Slash, but you know me and the horror genre are not necessarily friends.
Yeah, and so this one is maybe not one for Stephen, and I don't think there's any amount of convincing I could throw your way to be like, you know what, that sounds amazing. But with that being said, I really, really enjoyed the book in general. It did get its own series from Image last year. I believe 2011 it started, and it ended in April of 2013. It's a story of a character named Cassie Hack, who is a normal teenage girl until her mother goes psycho and kills a bunch of kids. Her mother is a lunch lady at a local school. And then then Cassie gets dragged into the world of slashers. And it turns out that Jason, Michael Myers, Freddy, all these things actually are real. And there's a very real thing causing these people to be mass murderers, supernatural killers. And so the series follows her and her partner, Vlad, and of course she picks up many, many sidekicks along the way. As she goes and hunts down various slashers, and there's an overarching storyline, of course, about this big cult of slashers that is working to take over the world, and that's actually, the storyline does get wrapped up at the end. There's no loose ends, but it is open for more continuation should Image decide to bring it back again at some point. I think this book has come and gone so many times. I really don't think it's completely done, even if the creator says it's done. I think someday he might come back to it. The book itself, it's got pretty good art by, I think, Tim Seeley is one of the original designers. Or he's a writer or the artist? I don't know. I will say that you find, I think Steve Shelley is a writer and the artist, actually, now that I think about it. I think he's both, so I wasn't wrong either way. but the covers, if you look at the covers with some of the original Hack Slash, it's kind of cheesecakey. And you look at it, because Cassie Hack fights these things in kind of almost like a goth princess outfit, like a super short miniskirt and a tank top and knee-high boots. So, but it's pretty violent. There's a lot going on in it, pretty gory, pretty violent, but I really enjoyed the book. It fits right into what I like about horror in general, and I really enjoyed it. So that would be my first pick. Unfortunately, that's one that's not continuing, but I want to talk about it. I didn't think we'd ever get a chance to talk about it in the show, because our show actually started after the book had ended. So it's still something that's ongoing, but I urge anybody who's interested in horror and that kind of thing, hackers and slashers and all that good stuff, to actually take a look at your local comic book shop, bookstore, Amazon. Take a look at the trade paperbacks and omnibuses, because it's pretty good stuff. There's been crossovers with the Hatchet horror movies, with Chucky. There's been crossovers amongst all of that, and it's really cool. I enjoyed it. I enjoy that quite a bit. So that is my number 10. I'm going to go ahead and go number 9, too, if you don't mind, Stephen. And this one we did manage to talk about this one this year. It would have been higher on the list, but it's something that I'm still kind of wary about it, and that book is Spawn from Image. Spawn, and the reason I say weary is because it's actually pretty good right now. But if you were a comic fan in the 90s, you know just how bizarre and overwrought the Spawn was in the 90s. And I keep waiting for the other shoe to drop, Steve. I'm thinking, when's it going to go back to that? Please don't. You know, but it's I keep waiting for it to happen because McFarlane, he does that stuff from time to time. We have elements of the old Spawn coming back into the book currently. It, for those who did not listen to the show back in, I believe we talked about that back in May, one of our first independent shows we covered Spawn. It's a story of a special agent or a black ops agent who's murdered by his boss and makes a deal with the devil, so to speak, and comes back. He agrees to lead his armies for his hell's armies, and in return he gets to come back to Earth. Not quite the way he wanted. He gets to come back as a giant piece of hamburger, it looks like, and his face just looks awful. Got a pretty badass costume, lots of cool powers, but it's gotten better since then because we now have a new character with a lot of mystery, a lot of I believe they found out this gentleman, the new Spawn, Jim, is oddly enough made up of multiple souls or something along those lines. It's very complex. but I do love the characters in this one. Again, it can get violent. It can get bloody, but not to the level of hack and slash. I call it hack and slash. I think it's just hack slash slash. I don't know. But I really have enjoyed Spawn from a long time. And I was a teenager when the first one, I was between 10 and 16 when the original Spawn was coming out. When I was young, I liked it. And as I got older, I'm like, this is kind of stupid. But now that it is going back to a little bit more of I love the art and the storyline for the new Spawn, and it's working out well. So I would say, the trouble with Spawn, I think, and this is something we covered in the actual show, is that it's difficult to jump on board at any point. Because it is, this book does not, it's not like the DC and Marvel books or even Hack Slash. It doesn't really start over at any given point. It just has kept going. So we're somewhere in the 200s now. Really, there's a lot of backstory to it. So it's a good book. I urge you to try to catch up somehow before. Because I think it's very difficult to do that. I don't know. I don't even know how to tell you where to begin with that. But it is a good book. I've enjoyed it pretty consistently. Like I said, it's one that I'm a little hesitant about because I'm waiting for the other shoe to drop here and it to get back to its 90s again. But so far, so good. So my first two, Hack Slash and Spawn.
All right. I think those are interesting. As you predicted, there wasn't anything you could say that would have gotten me to jump on the Hack Slash bandwagon, but I appreciated your thoughts about it. Interestingly enough, Spawn is also in my top 10. I want to engage with you a bit on it. I'll start with my number 10, which is Quantum and Woody from Valiant Comics. And, I don't often think about buying comics to just laugh, to laugh on pretty much every single page. And it's interesting because, you know, we think of the funnies, the comics, the Sunday things as when we were kids, we would ask for that part of the paper. You know, for you young kids, there used to be these things called newspapers. I'm doing inverted quotes right now. They were delivered to people's doors in the mornings, and then people would read these so-called newspapers. And inside, there would be these colorful comic strips on Sundays. And I wanted to get my Dilbert on or my Peanuts. And there's a lot of association of comics with humor. But I think with, let's say, the modern comic book buyer, or let's say the oeuvre that we deal with, Jason, I don't think humor is the first thing we think of. We always think it's nice, but it's almost like sprinkling. It's like seasoning. It's like salt. We'll have a little bit of humor in there. But to have a book entirely driven by humor, I think that's part of what Quantum and Woody is for me. There are times I go back and I will just reread the joke and ask myself, did they just say that out loud? Unbelievable. And I just read the latest issue today, I think was number 5. And there's a moment towards the end where Woody is in a hot tub, and there's this clone he's brought back from a hidden island. See, I've already kind of lost some people. But anyway, the comic part is the gal puts on she's new to this world. She's been sort of sheltered out on this secret hideaway island. And she puts on these soap bubbles to make herself look like Abraham Lincoln. And this sort of comedic thing, like, what is this girl going to do? She's like, do you think people will like me if I, and then the next panel is, she has this, like, fake soap bubble beard. And it's a superhero book that's really just a nonstop comedic farce. In every and farce in the classical sense of a farce, the way Aristotle would have defined it when he was talking about the different genres of theater. So farce meaning something that is ridiculous out there, but funny. And really enjoy it. You have these two brothers, both adopted by a very smart scientist who was working on a great discovery when he got murdered. And as they tried to investigate his murder, they got caught up, got some superpowers, and now they basically have to stay by each other's side every 24 hours or they'll dissolve. But they don't necessarily get along, not just how any, you know, brothers may not get along, but with the idea of adoption. There's a black and white race thing there, which I enjoy. They poke fun at that a lot. There's what, again, in this last book, I think it was asked, he said, oh, do you not like swimming? The white brother, Woody, asked, do you not like swimming? He's like, no. Quantum, who's the black brother, says no. And then Woody says, oh, is it because you don't know how? And Quantum responds, like, look, you're racist. And it's just that sort of back and forth banter, doesn't take itself too seriously, but also superhero, good, evil, interesting scenarios thrown in there. So Jason has talked about this before. When you want a break, sometimes independent comics are just a break from your superhero universe. This is a superhero comic, but I think the subtitle is The World's Worst Superhero Duo. And pick up an issue. I don't want to say I guarantee you'll be hooked. You have to like this humor, and you have to like the humor pervading the book, because that's what it, I would say it's a book defined as by humor. And, number 10 on my list, Quantum and Woody from Valiant Comics, the publishing house that got me back into comics about 2 years ago now.
I do like Quantum and Woody. I think they're very funny, very funny. There's only one other book that has made me laugh like that, and that's a Marvel book, so I won't talk about it today, but there's yeah, I mean, you don't see enough of the humor stuff, and that's what we talk about, right? I mean, you look at they are superheroes, but this is a different. When you go to the independent side, you get a different side of a superhero story. They're pathetic superheroes, but this funny stuff, or they're jaded superheroes, or they're terrible superheroes. But this is, it's a funny book. I agree with you on that one. I would agree wholeheartedly.
Number 9 on my list is Todd McFarlane's Spawn from Image Comics. And I, like Jason, read Spawn in the 90s. In fact, when I first started reading Spawn, it was on Spawn number 11. And I just read Spawn number 237 this afternoon. Couple things to keep in mind to Jason's earlier comments. One, Todd McFarlane is very good about answering these questions in the reader's pages, and he suggests basically three methods. If you're the sort of person that needs the full run, there are different ways you can get the trade paperbacks, and they have them in different – so they have these really beautiful hardcover ones that have extra art and collect like 15 issues. There's a one step down that's still also, I think, a hardcover, but it collects 10 issues at a time. And then the ones I've been getting are the trade paperbacks, and they collect 6 issues at a time. So he says, if you want to start from the very beginning, go buy all the trade paperbacks. And they're almost – those trade paperbacks are almost caught up to 150, 160, so much closer to our current storyline. That's one way to do it. Second way to do it, he says, is to go back to issue number 185. There are some massive changes that happened in 185, and if you want to go back that far, you can. He says the other jumping-on point is 200. Now, given that I just said the last issue was 237, going back and getting 36 issues is going to be a lot of work. That being said, Spawn doesn't sell very well anymore. So it shouldn't be too hard for you to pick it up at pretty much face value anywhere you want. What I think is interesting about this is part of the larger commentary of what frustrates me about mainstream comics is Todd's refused to reboot and get back to number one. He made those mistakes in the 90s of having too many glossy covers and all of those things. But now, with Amazing Spider-Man gone from the Marvel landscape and Marvel not having a single book over the number 50 at this point, and DC at the same time having retired the higher numbers of Action Comics and Superman and Batman, Spawn, oddly enough, stands in the position of highest counting number of issues of any comic out there. And when you think about that, you have to think about the continuity of the character. And we talked about, Jason's made this point before, about Marvel being continuity heavy. You are going to miss things in Spawn, even in the current run of Spawn, if you don't have the backstory. And take this from someone who's read, I don't know, the first 100 issues. So I've read 1 through 100. So I'm missing 85 to that pivotal 185 issue that Todd talked about. And I picked up around 220. So I'm missing 120 issues of continuity. But the way that he tells the story is such that you will not get completely lost. This is also a book that I am pulling for Szymon Kudransky. The art is lights out. I love how he's telling the story, and I talked about this in the Marvel show when I talked about Hawkeye and how the art drives the story and how I'm just as attracted to the art as I am to the storyline. I would argue in Spawn right now, I'm even actually more attracted to the art. The art tells the story so much that you could maybe take the words out. And that's something I really appreciate about this current run of Spawn. I'm obviously also, I might have said this before on previous shows, I'm very interested in God, religion, the battle between good and evil, and this book is maybe the most blatant of that genre. I mean, I suppose we could talk a little bit about that with Fatale, but there's not a clear good versus evil there. There's a sort of ambiguous middle and an evil. And with Spawn, there's clearly a good and an evil. And there's, you know, McFarlane might have a cynical take on things, but I really do enjoy what's going on in that book. And interesting enough, Jason and I both picked it in our bottom two of our top 10.
Good characters. I mean, really good characters. And I think, and I love they brought back, of course, I think we talked about this in the Spawn show many months ago, that one of my favorite comic book characters overall is the Clown. And he's been gotten a little bit of a reboot here in the most recent. And I tell you what, I don't think I made it to 100 of the original stuff, Steven. I don't think I made it that far. But I jumped back on at 200. And that was just on a whim, because, you know, and that's the appeal of the character. You're like, oh, I know I did like that. I really did. I'm going to give it a try again. Jump on a 200, and I'm glad I did, because I jumped in and I'm like, this is not the same stuff. It's almost like a reboot. I mean, there's a lot of continuity behind it, but jumping onto with a new character and the new situations, it really is a good spot to jump in. I think 200 would be the best spot to jump in. And you'll get it's not confusing. I mean, the stuff they mention is not, I don't have to read it to understand it. Like, oh, okay, that happened. Now I know. Keep moving forward.
And what's nice about it is the new character, so the current Spawn, his name is Jim Downing, and he didn't die. He's alive. So that presents complications for the K7 Lisa, which we find out is the name of Al Simmons, who was the original Spawn. The Spawn, those of you who read Spawn in the 90s may know. So you're talking about someone who's alive and bonded with the Spawn costume, as opposed to Al Simmons, who died and got the Spawn costume. So as opposed to just changing the character out, like an actor changing in a movie, and, you know, let's say in James Bond, the actor changes and all the cast of characters remains the same, this hasn't been the case. So, you know, Wanda, Terry, Cyan, those people have appeared since Al was not Spawn anymore, but they're not here. It's an entirely different look and feel. So if you feel like you got what you wanted out of the book back in the day, you might come back and really be interested and find it refreshing and new. So We've definitely given a lot of time to Spawn here, but I think it's a testament to the fact that it's lasted so many issues. We're here heading towards issue number 250. This time next year, they'll be just short of issue number 250. Jason, do you want to take us to your numbers 8 and 7?
Yeah, sure I do. Okay, so the first one, my number 8, is actually a very, very popular book, and I should say a popular cultural phenomenon, because it's not just a book anymore, a comic book. You can probably guess what it is just off of that. As a matter of fact, if you're watching TV tonight, you're going to watch a new episode of it. My number 8 choice is The Walking Dead. My number 8 choice is The Walking Dead. Now, I will tell you this, I do have issues with the book in general, with how it's presented. But you have to appreciate the story that's being told there on a very human level, in a very different way than many other zombie stories have been told before. The story of The Walking Dead, for those who have not paid attention to this ever-growing phenomenon. I mean, I was out this weekend doing Christmas shopping, and you can find something in anything with The Walking Dead on it. T-shirts, beer koozies, keychains, hats, figures, action figures, anything. It just goes on and on and on, and it's unbelievable just how much this has caught on. And the good thing about this is that for us comic fans, it's a good chance for us to kind of say, hey, we liked it first, and introduce people. I've talked to many people who did not realize this was a comic book first. And when I tell them some of the things that happened in the comic book that did not happen in a series, that brings them into that. They went, you know what, I want to read that now. The story, of course, it follows a local, I want to always call him a sheriff, but I don't believe he was, I mean, I think he was just an officer. I don't remember how. It's been so long since the beginning that almost doesn't apply anymore. An officer of the law, Rick Grimes, is put into a coma after a unfortunate crime incident. Of course, we know that he's been put into a coma after he's shot. Wakes up. Does not see his wife and child around him, doesn't wake up the family waiting for him, wakes up in a hospital that is torn to pieces, and the story just goes from there. He wakes up to a world of the dead, and as we get more and more actual human characters, no, I should say more alive characters in the story, what I like about this book is it's gone out of its way to enforce one of those tropes that makes really good zombie movies, and it's that the zombies aren't the real danger. It's always, always, always going to be people. The zombies are ancillary. They're dangerous. They're absolutely dangerous, but they're not the biggest threat. People are awful. I don't believe that myself, but I believe if we were all shoved in that situation, I think we would see something very similar to what happens here. Anything we can do to survive, walk on each other, whatever it takes. It's not an idea that makes me comfortable, but it's told in a very fascinating way. It pulls no punches at all. We know that. Let me give everybody a little spoiler here. For those everyone who's following the series, of course, knows that Rick's wife was killed last season, but his baby daughter was not. Now, the difference between the TV show and the comic book is that the TV show is almost afraid to take some of the horrible events that happen and put them on television. I understand that. So when Rick's wife is killed in the comic books, not only is she killed, but that little baby is killed as well. There are physical assaults of a sexual nature occasionally. Nothing shown like explicit, but it's definitely something that's talked about. It is a horrible world, but it's told in a fascinating way. I will tell you this. My one issue with the book, and it's a big one, even though I continue to read it, this is a big issue to me, is just how decompressed it is. It is, you know, you can wait a month, you can get a 20-page story, and you can think, well, that should have been like 5 pages, and that should have been all together. I can't believe I had to wait a month or 5 months for all this to wrap up. So my biggest problem with The Walking Dead as a comic book is that the decompression of the whole storyline really, I think, can drag it down. But it's still a fantastic story. The art is fantastic. The art continues to be fantastic. I think it's Charlie Adlard doing the art currently. He does at least all the covers. And again, it's another art style that's something that you wouldn't think would be wouldn't be something that people would jump on board with. You know, like, that's it. That is the art. It is absolutely the art. It's simple, but it's great. It looks fantastic. The Walking Dead, a very human story, a very terrifying story of what could happen. I know people believe the zombie apocalypse is going to happen. I know that sounds crazy, but I've talked to people who really believe it's going to happen. But it's a situation about what would happen to all of us if we had to deal with something like that. And it isn't pretty, but it is pretty at the same time. So it's a great book. And I know I could spend a lot more time talking about it. I know at some point we're probably going to be doing a show about it because how can you ignore The Walking Dead forever? It's become such a phenomenon that it's going to be a major part of a show in the future. I can almost guarantee you that. But that's my number 8 pick. Now, as I said, it would be higher, but the decompression of the story drags it down for me. As a matter of fact, when I go through, when I buy my comic books every 2 weeks, Steve, when I actually go through, I sit down and I make a point of sorting them out in the order I want to read them in. What I'm most excited to read, I save for last. I know that sounds crazy, but I'm kind of a delayed gratification guy. So the ones I really want to read
most. I'm the opposite.
I put this stuff on the back end because I'm like, I'm going to work my way up, and I put these in quotes because I don't tend to read what I think are bad books, but from best to worst to best. Least excitement to most, and The Walking Dead is usually the second or third book I'll read. So, and I probably read 40 or 50 every couple weeks, so it does add up. And let me be clear, then it's not a bad book. It's just there's the storytelling method. It almost feels like they're trying to drag it out longer than it should be. You know, like I've got a story in here. I've got a great story here. It could be done in 3 issues, but I'm going to take it out and drag it out into 10 issues, which doesn't sit well with me a lot of times. But it is a great story. My number 7, actually pretty new, one that I mentioned in an email to Stephen today that I have not had a chance to. I can't give you a complete idea, but I have only read 2 issues and I really, really enjoy it. And that is Sex Criminals by Matt Fraction. It sounds like it's going to be a super dirty book or something, like Sex Criminal. That sounds awful, you know. But it's actually a very lighthearted and interesting book. It breaks the fourth wall as a storytelling device, which I like. The main character, of course, is telling us the story of what's happened here. The characters, of course, Susie, and I want to say his name is John. Susie and John. They are people who have an extraordinary power. And that power is that when they orgasm, more or less, to say what it is, time stops for them. They can move around, but for the rest, the whole world around them is frozen. And so what do you think you do in that case? Well, we're going to go into the bathroom of this bank and have sexual relations and then go rob the bank. So it sounds super weird, and it is, but it's told in a fascinating way. I think Matt Fraction, of course, I like him as a writer. Chip Zdarsky, I believe is the name, is doing the art, which is it's very very nice art, kind of cartoony, but very cool. It is mature. Obviously the description alone should tell you it's mature. There's some mild nudity in the series. It's nothing. It's not a hardcore porn book, nothing like that, but there's some nudity throughout. And I wouldn't even say that it's extremely prevalent, but it's there. But it is so far only 2 issues in, and I'm telling you, I'm going to keep this on my list and see where it goes. This kind of talks to my point earlier about that I just don't know. It doesn't seem to be a limited series, but I don't know how long it'll go. Some ideas, you just wonder how they can go on very long, right? You know, and so for me, that's what this one is. I think it's fantastic. I hope it goes on for quite a while, but I just can't be sure yet. It doesn't seem to say it's a limited series, but it could be. We'll see. Very, very funny book. Very frank discussion. Very, very interesting premise. I really enjoy it. I like I said, it's only 2 issues in, I think, and I'm already picking this up and putting it on my top 10 for independent. And I don't like to do that normally because you just don't have a good idea of where the book is going by issue 2. But at this point, I kind of don't care where it's going. I like the ride. So this book, very cool. Susie and John, I'm interested to see where they're going to go. There's a group of people who are hunting them because of their powers. And we don't know who those people are just yet. So there's a little bit of a deeper impact of these powers. They're not just going around robbing and banging. although that's part of the book. It's very, very cool. So the first issue is Susie's origin. The second issue is John's origin, of course, and again, Susie prevalently throughout the series, the issues so far, breaks the fourth wall, talks to you as the reader about some of this, and it's very funny. Very cute book so far. So I'm really enjoying it, and that's going to be my number 7. And again, I know that sounds odd, but it's worth a look, at very least a look, but only if you are an adult. I think it's a very mature book, even if it is kind of funny. So, Sex Criminals by Matt Fraction, Chip Zdarsky, check it out. And those are my 8 and number 7.
All right, fair enough. It's hard to not know, it's hard to ignore the phenomenon that is The Walking Dead. I feel everyone on the planet is watching it except for me. And whenever anyone comments about it and I don't say anything and they'll say, well, did you watch The Walking Dead? I'm like, no. But I think it's also because I try to exercise that same caution, Jason, with television shows as I do with my comics.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I have my sort of 30. I try not to be watching any more than 5 shows at a time, whether I'm watching them on Netflix and catching up or watching them as a season progresses, I just feel. And even 5, I feel, is a lot of shows to watch. So there's just so much content out there begging for our time, isn't it?
Isn't there?
And The Walking Dead is definitely there, and it's hitting you on every platform. So they've got the TV, they've got the comics, they've got the graphic novels. So
games, movies,
Jason's
it's just number, it's going crazy.
Exactly. 8 and 7. All right. So my number 8 and number 7. My number 8, Judge Dredd Year 1. And I should confess to having a great love of Judge Dredd. We've covered Judge Dredd on this season of Culture Comics. I also appeared on a sister podcast, Swords in Space, to talk about Dredd, the movie, the Carl Urban edition. Judge Dredd Year 1 is part of a family of books that IDW is putting out. And IDW is going all in on Judge Dredd. So there is a Judge Dredd flagship book. There's a Year 1. They did a Judge Dredd versus Mars Attacks miniseries. Judge Dredd Classics reprints. Because Judge Dredd is a very long-running comic, and it's reprinting some of the best of the original Judge Dredd from 82,000. So, and I think there's even more Judge Dredd titles coming. So this Judge Dredd title does make my top 10 list, and it's Judge Dredd Year 1, and it's Dredd just out of the academy as a young judge. Even for someone genetically enhanced, you still can be young at some point. So this is young Joe Dredd, and the first story arc features a transport to another world and a lot of psychic abilities. And Dredd, we find out, is one who, at least the young Dredd, dismisses this sort of stuff as ridiculous. Like, we can't prove this, psychic powers, this is crazy. And then, of course, he sees it himself. And I think a lot of times we're used to the old Dredd who's been through it all, and really you can't surprise old Dredd. But young Dredd, it's interesting to see how he deals with certain situations. So Judge Dredd Year 1 is my number 8. My number 7 is Captain Midnight. Captain Midnight is Captain America as Bruce Banner as the Punisher. And by that I mean, take someone who is embodying the sort of Captain America mindset. He's called Captain Midnight. He comes from the World War II era. He is a man out of time. So this is one of the interesting things that you can do with some of the independent comics is they take essentially open source characters for which the copyright has not been renewed, it's run out, and it's out there on the market, and someone can just pick up a Captain Midnight and start writing him. And that's what's happened with this character. And in fact, recently they brought in another open source character, Hawkman, who was in with Captain America, Captain America, Captain Midnight. So see, I'm already doing it. So I want to make sure I declare up front, there are similarities to Captain America. They're both World War II. They both are men out of time from World War II, but that's where the similarities pretty much end. So Jim Albright is a genius inventor, and that's where I say think about Hank Pym, think about Bruce Banner. No one thinks of Captain America as having a great inventing brain. He's got a great strategic brain, but he's not a great inventor. So think of that within Captain Midnight. And then also, he actually kills people. and that's where the Punisher comes in. So Captain Midnight uses guns and will definitely kill Nazis, and he'll kill bad people. He has no problem with that. And as I said on previous shows, very controversially, I'm sure, I have no problem with criminals in the act of criminality being gunned down. Not a problem for me. And not a problem for Captain Midnight. So I'm enjoying, it's only on issue 5 right now, but I'm enjoying the run, and I'm enjoying learning more about this different take on a man out of time. So I love Captain America. We talked about that in the Marvel show. But this is another take on that. So number 8, Judge Dredd, year 1, and number 7, Captain Midnight.
Fascinating. I have not, and we probably won't surprise each other with some of our picks today, but I think that I was not even aware you're reading that book. I had no idea. So I think our lists are going to be very, very different today. It does sound good, though. It does sound intriguing. Very, very intriguing. And, of course, Judge Dredd, always awesome. That one, admittedly, I like to read, but that's one I jump into from time to time. So I kind of jump in and jump out. Not because it's bad, just because I already have a lot, but I really, really enjoy the character, and so I can appreciate that. I actually did read the first arc or two of Judge Dredd Year 1. I think just the first arc. I can't remember how many I got through. But then I've jumped back and forth since then, so I jump in the middle of an arc sometimes. I don't mind doing that. You know, if the book's good, I don't mind jumping in the middle of something. Good, though. Very good.
Well, Jason's talking about a lot of jumping, and for those of you who might just be jumping on with us here at The Culture of Comics, you are listening to Jason Fraser and Stephen Heiner break down our Independence end of the season, end of the year polls. We are telling you our top 10 list of books that we'd like, that we are probably going to be pulling next year, and we want to make the case for you to pull them as well. And, of course, we are on the AMDG network as we are always. A couple things I want to remind you all, because this is the end of the season. Number one, we have a survey going on to try to understand our listeners and what they want a little bit more. If you go to facebook.com and you look for The Culture of Comics, first of all, like our page. We have a contest for the people who get us to 30 likes, and you'll be eligible for a trade paperback of your choice within a reasonable amount. Of course, we can't deliver anything signed by Stan Lee or anything. We'll just get you a regular trade paperback. You can also find that link among our tweets on Twitter, and just click and look for our end-of-season survey. And filling out the survey and liking us on Facebook are different contests, but they both have the same prize. And you are eligible for both. And we have some people who filled out our survey. Thank you very much. As a warning, if you don't want to just give the prizes away to those people who actually took the time to fill out the survey, hop in with them and fill out that survey. So that'll be open probably until the end of the month, so December 1st. So get in there and pass that along. So we'll keep rolling, Jason. Can you take us to numbers 6 and 5, please, on your list?
6 and 5. Let's see. Which one do I want to talk about first? okay, so this is another one that's very interesting and a very unique one. Also, I believe, written by, I want to say Matt Fraction's writing this one too. Matt Fraction's writing this one as well. The art is not one of my favorite artists, but I think it works well with this book. It's art by Howard Chaykin. The book is called Satellite Sam. Another image book. I think you'll find the vast majority of my independents kind of skew that direction, interestingly enough. They tend to tell some very interesting stories. Satellite Sam, not a superhero book per se. It does tell the tale of an actor who does play a superhero or a space hero in an old-timey 1951 television show, like those old serials, like the old Superman serial, named Satellite Sam, of course. And this, but the story is more of a crime noir, which I find very interesting. It's set, of course, in New York City. It follows the story of, as I said, a character who plays Satellite Sam on a television show who was found murdered. And his son jumps in and tries to figure out what he begins to question if he even knew his father. His father, it turns out, maybe had some secrets. His dad died in a flop house on the bad side of town somewhere. And, of course, they find a box full of photographs he took of women in various states of undress, lingerie or whatever. And so he begins to try to find, to hunt down some of these, at least one of these women, I should say, to understand what happened to his father, who murdered his father, if his father was even murdered at all. Of course, it could be suicide. But very, very, I don't think it's suicide, I'll tell you that. We're up to issue four. Issue five comes out, and goodness, in a couple weeks. It's, so the book has been going on since July, but it doesn't have any, what I would call a regular release schedule. It's every... came out, I think, July, August, September, and October, but then we skipped the month this month. So, but done very well. The art, Howard Chaykin's art, seems to fit this type of story more than most. I'm not normally a fan of his when I see his book, his art. And for example, I read some Nick Fury book a couple weeks ago that had his art in it, and it's just not a fan of that kind of art for superhero books. But for a kind of a gritty mystery story, I find it works very well. I mean, we're talking, it's the same kind of idea behind Frank Miller and Sin City. There's certain art styles that work well with telling a certain type of story. And Matt Fraction seems to like telling a lot of crime stories. Probably not a surprise here, but you know, he's been telling stories about Fantastic Four and all this stuff for some time. So the man's got a dark side, trying to tell some of that stuff out there. Currently in the book... beginning, he's found one of the women, probably the woman, but don't think she's a murderer yet. But it's a very interesting little mystery. I'm very intrigued to see where it goes. I wish it would come out more often. It feels like it's been months since I've read another issue, but I guess it was just last month. But it just takes forever. So that's the point. When you read a mystery and you want to know more like that, they're doing their job right. When you feel like you just can't wait to get to the next issue to figure out what is happening here. They're doing their job. Again, not really a superhero book. Nothing really fantastical. There's no supernatural elements. No superheroic elements. It's all very realistic, but it's told in the backdrop of a time when television was in its infancy, and this trying to figure out how to keep the show going while solving a murder. Very, very interesting so far, and probably not one you've even heard of, Stephen. So it's I won't ask. Satellite Sam, my number six. My numbers 5 through 1 are actually one, I believe we've talked about all of these books in a prior show at some point. Let me just look what I've got here. Okay, so my next one I'm going to pick is, it's actually kind of a cheating thing because it's two books, but they're both in the same universe. They're both stories that Stephen wouldn't like. I already know this. But my number five is Buffy the Vampire Slayer and Angel and Faith. I do those together because they are two stories set in the same universe, kind of two sides of the same story. Not really. I guess not two sides of the same story, but two sides of this universe from Joss Whedon, who many of you know was the director of The Avengers, also directed a very cool little movie called Cabin in the Woods. If you're a movie buff, you can check those out. But Joss Whedon... very, very, very cool writer overall. I believe we also have some of the original showrunners from the show. I don't think I need to describe what Buffy and the Vampire Slayer is about. I think many of us probably already know. If we didn't watch a TV show, you're at least aware of what it's about. And that's, of course, a person who is chosen to be a vampire slayer. A very interesting season. This season, they're running the comic book in as seasons, as continuations of the actual television shows, which ended. Goodness, probably 7 years ago or more now. So very interesting continuation. I know that there are many Buffy and Angel fans out there, so I won't spend a lot of time talking about that, but I really enjoyed the books. Good storyline. I actually skewed more towards the Angel and Faith side this time because it was very cool. The rogue slayer and the vampire with the soul trying to figure out how to resurrect a certain character who was killed in a prior season. Won't get too much spoils away for that one either. But it's if you were a fan of either one of the shows, I can tell you that the comic book has the flavor of the shows. You're going to get more of your fix reading these books, and I really enjoyed them both. Again, I really feel like they're both kind of, they go hand in hand. If you're reading one, you're probably reading the other. So that's why that is my number 5/2 picks. So my number 6, number 5, Satellite Sam by Matt Fraction and Howard Chaykin, and my number 5, Buffy the Vampire Slayer / Angel in Faith.
Excellent. So my number 6 is actually the book that brought me back into comics. And it's interesting, I reflected a lot on this, that it didn't crack my top 5, but this was the book that brought me back after being gone for 15 years, probably. So I really want to, and I'll talk about some books that didn't make it a little later, but one of the criteria really I have to ask myself is, am I sentimentally attached to the character, or am I happy with what's going on in the book? Because we all have a limited amount of funds and to spend, and we have to be spending them not just on our sentiment, but on really good writing, because if you don't vote with your feet by dropping the book, the bad writing will just perpetuate itself. So you're also doing your own character a disservice. So the character that brought me back into comics when it got rebooted, when Valiant restarted again, was X-O-Manowar. Eric Avdachia, another man out of time, abducted by aliens in the 3rd century BC. Eric is from a barbarian tribe with roots in present-day Romania. He gets abducted by aliens known as the Vine, which go and conquer other worlds, but when they came to Earth, they put some seedlings there. They think of themselves in terms of plants. They worship plants. And the Vine then transport Arik out into deep space. As you know, with deep space travel, there are effects on time. Time gets distorted across long-scale deep space travel. And when Arik manages to break free of his captors, acquire a sentient armor. Think of Tony Stark's Iron Man armor meets Thor. So what if you had a sort of godlike armor that was sentient, not just Jarvis, which is a program that's made by Tony, but something that is worshipped as a god by the Vine, and which only it grows organically. It's not repairable in the same way that we would think of a mechanical suit. And Arik destroys the Vine, comes back to Earth, brings back some descendants of his tribe who speak a sort of dialect that he can understand. And the man out of time in classic style lands in present-day Romania, claims it as the rightful king, goes to the museum to pick up his sword and crown. He is confronted by the Eternal Warrior, who is another really great character in the Valiant Universe, and is warned that you can't just do this. This is the modern world, and Russia is going to be upset. The United States is going to be upset. The United Nations is going to be upset. Everyone's going to come against you. Arik, not only because he's a Visigoth and he's thinking in these more primitive ways, but he's got this godlike weapon. He doesn't really care. And as we kick off into the miniseries that is dominating the Valiant Universe now called Unity, we're going to find out just exactly how the Valiant Universe and the world that Arik is in is going to deal with a Visigoth in supernatural armor, essentially supernatural armor it may seem like to them, who wants to claim part of present-day Romania for his people. Robert Venditti is writing, and Kerry Nord has been doing the art. Fantastic job. Been very happy on the run. And there's been some dips in the storytelling, but I have a great love for the character, and I'll probably be following this book for quite a long time. Number 5 is a bit more predictable. Jason had alluded to his attachment to Buffy and Angel and Faith, and I have a sentimental attachment to my number 5, which is Star Wars. And I never got pulled in by all of the different mini titles that Dark Horse has done over the years. And I understand now, while I'm reading this current Star Wars run by Brian Wood, it's set in the time period after Episode 4 of the Star Wars storyline that we currently know, that the reason why it made sense to do a lot of miniseries like Star Wars Rebel Alliance or Star Wars, you know, Dark Knights or something like that, that the continuity would be too much. It allowed them to preserve the fan fiction feel of the universe where people could just kind of jump in and play with their own part of the Star Wars universe. I get that now. But the reason why I'm pulled into this current run of Star Wars and why I think a lot of fans have come back after sort of writing Dark Horse and the Star Wars universe off after all these years, because there were too many of these little storylines, is because this is a good story, and it's a slightly different take on things we've always taken for granted. So one of the things Jason and I have talked about before, Leia is an accomplished X-Wing pilot here. Now, the original storyline doesn't rule that out. In the movies, it's not ruled out that Leia would be an X-Wing fighter. It's just never brought up. So this is apparently something that was a lot more prominent in early drafts of Star Wars, but never really made it to the movies. But the way that Leia's character is written in the movies, it's not beyond comprehension that she would have been a talented X-Wing fighter, especially with her movement, her affinity for the Force and the ability to use that as a pilot. We knew it helped Luke. Why wouldn't it help Leia? Really been enjoying the run. The art has been uneven at times, especially in the first four or five issues. It was lights out, and I think we all felt like we were back in the movies. Over the last few issues, it's been a bit uneven, but I'm going to stick with this for the storyline, even if the art is a bit borderline, just because I think, like many, I'm happy to be in any part of the Star Wars universe anytime. So those are my number 6 and number 5, Valiant Comics' Exo Manowar and Dark Horse's Star Wars original timeline written by Brian Wood.
I'm fascinated that Exo Manowar is so, I would almost say, low on the list. I think it's interesting. I wonder what your top 4 are then, because I'm very curious to see if those are going to be...
Well, now we'll find out soon.
Be there. No, and I don't think I'm going to spoil anything by telling you that Star Wars made my list, too. Obviously a little higher, but made my list as well. So should be interesting, man. Should be pretty cool.
Well, why don't you take us a little higher, Jason?
Okay. Well, I'm going to start with number 4, Star Wars. When I said a little higher, I meant a little higher. Number 4 for me was Star Wars again, and I think you have a very good point there, Stephen, when you say that the other side, why start now? It's intimidating to try to figure out
where to start with some of those older stories, and then the fact that they often don't even matter. You know, this doesn't intrigue me enough to want to jump in. If it doesn't matter, tell stories about characters I don't really care about. I mean, in a universe, granted, that I care about very much, but something that doesn't interest me. So when I heard that this was going to be a series that followed the original story, I mean, in Kanan, in continuity, yeah, why not? I was totally hooked. And I'm glad I jumped on, because I think so far the story itself has done nothing but added to my love of the movies in general. I love being able to fill in the blanks, and these blanks, they're not a disservice to fans. You can be the biggest fan of Star Wars, and you're going to like this book. The characters speak as though they would from the films. The storyline doesn't discredit anything we already know about from the movies. It's all just been done very well. And so I love it. And I like the art. I don't have any problem with the art really at all. I don't think I've had any problem this whole time. So I really enjoy the book. I think, as we said, we talked about in the Star Wars show, or the story we did, where we discussed this book, I love that we're getting to see Princess Leia be more than a chainmail bikini. And this is, this brings up an interesting point, because be prepared to find that I'm much more of a nerd than you thought. I collect action figures, and I've been collecting this new series of Star Wars figures called the Black Series. They're very well done, 6-inch scale figures. We got our first series. It had Darth Maul, R2-D2, Luke Skywalker, and a Stormtrooper or something like that. That's cool. Then we found out Series 2, we're going to have Han Solo, Boba Fett, Greedo, Han Solo, and Leia. I think I said that, Yeah. So Leia's in the second series. And I was actually kind of disturbed that the first figure we get in this high-end figure collection for Leia is in the bikini. And I told my wife, like, I don't know how you're going to take this when I tell you this, but it just bothers me they did that. And she understood where it's coming from. It just doesn't feel right. It feels like we over-sexualize the character when there's more to her. Just because she's the only major female in the film series, I shouldn't say the only, but the most major female, it doesn't mean that she's also has to be the sex symbol. And she's, Carrie Fisher back in the day, attractive. Heck yes, the character attractive. But there's more to it. And I think that's what's really cool about this series is it brings more of the attributes that we know were there, at least demonstrated slightly in the movies, to the forefront here. She's a commander. She's a very able commander. She's not scared to take chances. She's leading a Black Ops Rogue Squadron X-Wing crew, and I love it. I love it, love it, love it. So I think it sounds crazy, but I think that what I'm liking most is the characterization of Princess Leia in the series. That's more of what I knew as a character. That she should be. I think that, the bikini was nice and all, but that's not what should define Princess Leia. And I think this series is doing a great job to helping us understand how she should be defined. So that's a lot of conversation for one major point, but that's really one of the major points that keeps me on the series. So, number four for me, Star Wars. Brian Wood doing a great job there. Really, really like it. If it weren't for the other three books, it'd be even higher. So, number three for me is one I've talked about vaguely before, and that's Saga. So my number three and number four, kind of they're the space opera. They're the space operatic comic books. Saga, the story of two warring races who it's a war book. It's a Romeo and Juliet book. It's a raising a baby book. All those things sound awful. but they're actually really good. They're written. They are come together all into one big mishmash. And I described it before, and I think I've seen it described before other places as well as Game of Thrones meets Star Wars. And that's very apt. There's a lot of deep story going on behind the scenes. We're seeing with some of the prince and the royalty and the bounty hunters that are coming. A lot of betrayals. All kinds of betrayals. My goodness, so many. A lot of death. A lot of real stuff happening, but told in a very fantastical tale. Again, not a book. Star Wars you could give to your kids to read. Saga, probably not. The language, the sex, not incredibly prevalent, but there. And when it's there, it's pretty rough. But good. It's part of the book, and it works. So I really, really enjoy Saga overall. I think it's so far working very well for me. The storyline is just fantastic, and my wife's boss, another Jason, hooked me onto it, and I have really enjoyed it. That's one I'll be reading until they decide they can close the doors on it. I sure wish it would be a little more consistent coming out. This is another one that seems like it takes longer than a month to come out sometimes, but I think they're back on track now. So I think we're going to be back on track month over month for Saga, which is, again, a very, very good book, and again, the only real way I can describe it is Star Wars and Game of Thrones. Two very cool things combined into one. A lot of space, a lot of aliens, a lot of betrayals, a lot of violence, a lot of sex, a lot of cursing. All the stuff us men like, so so we're good. But females like it too. So number four for me, again, Star Wars. Number three, very, very cool book called Saga.
And there it is. Jason turned me on to Saga from the independent show we did on it, and I did pick up the first issue. Image every now and then will re-release a number one of a series for $1, and that's a no-brainer to pick that up. I think I picked that up. But all the trades are out for Saga, so if you haven't caught up, you should. The only reason I haven't caught up is because I was already at my pull limit there, and as I was evaluating for this year, I was hoping that there might have been room for Saga on this list. But alas, I have to say it did not make it. So my number four I know is not going to be on Jason's list is Star Trek. And that's on the IDW. And, of course, you know, as a Star Wars fan, I'm sure he's hurt to see that it ranks above Star Wars on my list. But I have to declare my loyalty somewhere, that my loyalty to Star Trek is a tiny bit higher. I consider myself a Trek warrior. I love Star Trek and Star Wars, but the reason Trek is in the beginning of that sentence is because it's a little bit more Trek. And I've been really happy with IDW's run, and they're doing something similar to what Jason was talking about with Buffy and the season and Smallville as well. They're using the people who are writing the movies as story consultants. So Robert Orci, who helped write the scripts for the last two Star Trek movies that made it to the big screen, has been a story consultant on these IDW comics. And that's provided a lot of great story. And the story up to this point, up to the release of Star Trek Into Darkness, was filling in a lot of the backstory from the movies, from the last movie. And what it's doing now is filling in the gap from what just happened with the movie to probably the next movie. And that's what's great. If you're a Star Trek fan, or even if you're not a Star Trek fan, enjoy the movies, what this does is it provides you with a way to basically go along with the movies as they're happening, and that isn't happening anywhere in comics right now. There isn't any way for you. We could see this maybe with Avengers Assemble and the Marvel line, but where you have a movie and in the summer leading up to Countdown to leading into Darkness, IDW did a 4-issue miniseries called Countdown to Darkness, which gave a backstory to the movie without giving the movie away. Well, it's done in continuity. It's done in lockstep with the movies. And then after the movie, we have a new comic from IDW called Star Trek Khan, which just pursues the storyline of Khan. And then in the current Star Trek, they're pursuing the story as if the movie has just ended. So for those of you who are Star Trek fans, it's great. For those of you who are, you wouldn't say you're Star Trek fans, but you've seen the last two movies, it's a really great way to basically keep in. You don't have to wait till the next movie comes out in a couple years. You can follow the action right now, and you're going to be so much more filled in on what happens in the next movie because you have the continuity that the casual fan doesn't. So Star Trek coming in for me at number 4. And number 3, Judge Dredd. IDW's relaunch of the original. And what's important to note is Judge Dredd is still going on in 82,000 for the original character. So what this is another attempt, even though ironically this is about basically a caricature of America in many ways, the Judge Dredd character. It was started by Brits. And the last time they tried to do Judge Dredd was with DC back in the 90s, and they only had an 18-issue run. I have all 18 of those issues. But this is – the art is fantastic, and it's updating with a really, truly American feel and having the savvy to comment on American issues from the American perspective as opposed to the American perspective, the American situation from a British perspective. Really interesting, really enjoying it, and Judge Dredd is a favorite character. This isn't as lockstep as Star Trek is, as I just described, but there are clearly elements related to the movies. We see Judge Anderson prominently featured in the earlier ones, and I think at least this first year of Dredd was under the assumption that the Dredd movie would do well enough to have a sequel, and I think IDW had the same thinking of what they were going to do with Judge Dredd as what they're doing with Star Trek, but as it looks right now, unfortunately, for those of us who are Dredd fans, we're not going to see another Carl Urban Dredd movie. Keep our fingers crossed, but that's number 4, number 3 for me, Star Trek and Judge Dredd. Jason, bring us to the top, number 2 and number 1, please.
Well, I think I'm beginning to suspect you and I have the same number 1. I could be wrong. we haven't heard it talked about yet, so I'll save it. Obviously, we'll start with number 2. It's in this book, I know you're not reading, so I know we didn't tie on this one. But my second favorite independent comic book of the year, and I want to continue. I hope to continue to read. Unfortunately, I do know this one's ending in about 12 issues. It's going to have a 50-issue storyline and be done. And then we're approaching 50 very quickly. And that book is Chew.
It's one I've talked about before. It has one that I adopted early in the year, and it has I went through and read every single issue and voraciously read every single issue.
Really jumped on that bandwagon after I read the first trade paperback. I was like, this is great. I am all over this book, and I have been. True to my word, I have been an avid reader of this book. It is a storyline in which superpowers are related to food or various forms of eating. It's a world where the FDA is the most powerful organization in the world as a result of a massive chicken, bird flu, chicken flu poisoning that occurs because of bad poultry, decimates the world's population, and we're not talking post-apocalyptic anything like that, but it's changed the way we as a people live. As a matter of fact, meat is outlawed. Chicken is like a the best drug you can get a hold of. So they're dealing with chicken dealers and various things like that. It sounds as crazy as it is, but it works really well. Our main character, Tony Chu, is an agent at the FDA. He has the power to taste something, to eat a bite of something and know what happened, know its story, basically. So he has solved murders before by doing such gross things as taking a bite of a dead guy. So it's gross oftentimes, but it's not something that they display in a disgusting manner. It's done as tastefully as it can be, I think. But the story is fantastic, and it's told with a lot of humor in it. So I think when you talk about Quantum and Woody and the humor in that for me, this book gives me that. It's oftentimes very funny. His partner is now kind of a Terminator character, so there's cyborgs or people with superpowers. There is a lot going on in this world. There's vampires, kind of. There's a little bit of a story behind that. And throughout all of the laughter and tragedy of this so far, I believe 38-issue run, maybe even a little more than that now, we have come across Tony, the main character, has changed drastically. He is now preparing to go to war with somebody who did something horrible to his family. I don't want to give that away in case someone wants to read the book, but it is a very interesting storyline. We're setting up for the end, which should be coming in about 10 issues, unfortunately. I wish it would go on longer. I think this book, you wouldn't think it has what it takes to stay around, but it does. It's like I said, very funny, very, very well done. Strange characters, strange superpowers, but all done in a very funny way, and also in an incredibly interesting way. Once you read one, I can almost guarantee you, unless you're grossed out by that kind of stuff, and I think that's what we talked about when Stephen and I talked about this, is that it might gross him out. I think you'd like it. I can almost guarantee if you read one trade paperback, if you want to give it a chance, that you're going to end up loving it. If you want to give it a chance and deal with the gross-out stuff. There's some of that stuff going on in the first few issues at least. After that, it kind of dies down. But they got to hook you somehow, I guess. So my number two, again, a fantastic book written by, or created, I should say, by John Layman, Rob Guillory. I was correct, we are on issue 37, so we are setting up here for the final 12 issues. So it's coming up. It's coming to a close sometime next year. I guess 12 issues, one a month, if everything goes according to plan, one a month. We'll be looking at this book ending by this time next year. So jump on. Take a look. It's funny, and it has a definitive ending, so it's something that you won't have to jump on and make a huge commitment to, but something that you can read and really enjoy. And I think, and I could be wrong, but I think Stephen and I might have the same number one here. This book, another one that I jumped on early this year and kind of fell in love with, even if I don't know what the hell is going on. And that book is Fatale. Fatale, written by Brubaker. Who's in the artist? Who is the artist, Stephen? Do you remember who's doing the art? I think it changes. I don't remember.
No,
anyway.
No, it doesn't change. It's Sean Phillips. He
does the covers.
Do a lot
he do the
of
art
stuff
too.
Together.
I know they do. I know he does the covers. He's doing the art on the interior too. Oh, maybe I bet he does because I bet he gets the covers.
I thought so.
You could be right, but because they do, they work very closely together. So. Yeah, Sean Phillips at least did the first few issues. I think he's probably still doing it, I guess, because they don't tend to part ways, these two. This story, again, told starts off, at least to me, it started off as a very noirish mystery. Again, as you probably guessed, having heard some of my picks today, that's something that I gravitate towards. I get enough of my superhero stuff from my DC and Marvel, so I look for some different stuff when I go to the independent side. And this very different starts off as somewhat of a mystery, and as it gets further and further, there's clearly something supernatural happening. I think it's safe to say that the main character, the Fatale in question, Josephine, is probably a succubus, something like that. I don't know that. It's not been, there's no confirmation, but there's something going on with this lady, and she's being hunted by dark, dark forces. And what I like about this book is it really is telling her story throughout various time periods about her, how she gravitates through different men and ruins them, essentially. I mean, I think that's, I think it's safe to say she's ruined almost every man she's come across, unintentionally in most cases. It's just part of her power. She drives men crazy, and they'll do anything. And unfortunately, anything goes poorly for many people. So it a fantastic book. We are getting a little bit more of the current-day storyline going on as well. The latest issue, I actually picked it up yesterday. I haven't read it yet. I'm dying to read it. But again, I am a delayed gratification guy, so I'm going to read it tonight probably. Right now she's shacking up with a band and tearing them apart unintentionally again, or again, maybe intentionally. I don't know what her deal is. I think that's part of the appeal, is trying to figure out whether she's good or she's bad. She seems good, but she does things that end up being very bad most of the time. The book starts off with a writer whose relative is killed, and he collects a journal and takes off from there. He meets the character Josephine, who shouldn't be alive and as young as she is, and he has unfortunate incidents happen. And then we as the series progresses, we take a look at some of her past. And I really, really have enjoyed this book. Again, one that I was a late starter to. I jumped on at about issue 5 of the live series, but I would jump back and grab those first few issues because I was intrigued. My number one for this year is, and for next year, hopefully, is Fatale by Brubaker and Phillips. Love it, love it, love it.
Well, as Jason alluded to, there is definitely some sharing there. At least Fatale made my top two. I can say my number two is another Brian Wood production, The Massive. And I've said this before, that I have a lot of love for conservation and issues relating to conservation. And The Massive is a story of multiple cataclysms that hit the Earth at once that do not necessarily seem to be related or are not necessarily related to climate change. It's very vague, and I think purposefully so. And Ninth Wave, sort of loosely modeled on Sea Shepherd, a militant environmental group that goes around trying to make sure that whales and dolphins and other sea creatures aren't hunted to extinction. You have to keep in mind, in a world in which everything's been massively imbalanced, some of these situations have actually changed. So where whales are not on the edge of extinction, you know, they're actually thriving in some places. The founder of Ninth Wave, Callum Williams, called Cal, is a former mercenary. He used to work for an organization similar to, let's say, Blackwater, a paramilitary organization, Soldier of Fortune, Soldiers for Hire, and just one day realizes that this is not the life he wants to live, and he buys an old ship and puts together a campaign and gets some idealistic young people to join him in conservation. That was before the fall, the cataclysms that happened, and they're trying to find their way in this new world where there are no centralized governments. There's still a U.S. Navy, but they're not as attached to the U.S. government, which has to be out in Colorado now because of how much the water has raised. So to Jason's point about apocalyptic stuff, this definitely is part of the trend of comics. That's the only one on my list, actually, that's part of that apocalyptic trend. So for me, it ties in some love for conservation, the sort of complexities of making those conservation decisions when it seems like the idea is just to survive. Conservation seems to be a luxury of a first world country or a first world civilization, but that it can still be a priority now. And you have some mysterious characters, not quite like Joe, Josephine, and Fatale, where their origins are entirely clouded, but clouded enough. And the art is really great, and I would talk about it in the same breath as Hawkeye and Sizamon Kudransky's Spawn, art that draws you into the book. What is neat about the story arcs here is they're usually done in three or four parts. So if you feel you just want to test out the Massive, you've heard enough from me to kind of get you going. And I didn't actually mention in all of my exposition just now the main, what's the story behind the Massive. The Massive is the sister ship of the Capital, K-A-P-I-T-A-L. The Capital is the smaller ship that Cal is on. The Massive is a ship, a sister ship, that the Capital lost contact with in a storm and has been pursuing around the world. It seems like she's always just over the horizon, and she comes up on radar, and then she goes away. So it's a bit of a MacGuffin. Hitchcock talks about this in storytelling, that a MacGuffin is something implausible or something that you use to drive the story along, and I think so far the Massive has been the MacGuffin of this book. You know, where is the ship? Who's on the ship? You know, have they abandoned them? What are they doing now? And what people have to do in different situations when they feel that they're no longer accomplishing their conservation mission, they want to get off the bus and can't really do that, you're in the middle of the ocean. So the Massive, for me, number two on my list. And, of course, as Jason alluded to, number one for me is Fatale. This is a book I really enjoy. It's definitely a far departure from Jason and I's love of, let's say, the cosmic universe or superheroes or Avengers or X-Men or any superhero stuff. It's not there. But what you are looking at is pure evil and this girl who you're not sure about. I was sort of thinking of that line from Swingers. Jason, he says, you know, I don't want you to be like the guy in the PG-13 movie that everybody's really hoping makes it happen. I want you to be like the guy in the rated R movie, the guy you're not sure about yet, right?
Yeah.
And I think Josephine's like this. She's definitely the girl in the rated R movie. We don't really know what's going on. We don't know whether we should feel sorry for her. I mean, she's definitely put in situations where we're supposed to feel bad for her, but she's murderous. She has controlled men for centuries, and yet there still seems to be some heart there, some ability and desire to love, tears. We see all of that. And Brubaker, I think, is determined to hold us off as long as possible. You know, Jason's talked about delayed gratification. We're 18 issues into this book, and we do not know the definitive story of this girl. We've seen shards. We've seen bits and pieces. There's clues, and for someone like Jason, who's much better about figuring out mysteries, he probably has a better idea of who she is than I do. But I'm still really enjoying it. And if you like a classic noir comic, par excellence, you're going to like Fatale. A couple things that I like about Fatale, and a couple things that may draw you in, if Jason and I haven't sold you enough, the fact that it was our number one, for both of us, and we didn't talk about our lists ahead of time. Things that you should really think about. One, at the end of each Fatale, usually Ed Brubaker has an editorial in which he talks about things that are going on, and he went on and on about Breaking Bad finale in this last issue, and just talks about, you know, and it kind of gives me some insight. Ed Brubaker is someone who likes Breaking Bad because of the slow development of the characters. Well, of course, if he likes Breaking Bad and what Vince Gilligan was doing there, I'm not really that surprised that Fatale is being written the way that it is. Second thing that's really interesting is there's usually an essay, additionally, an essay, one page, single space, double column, about a particular topic. This last issue, issue 18, featured an essay on H.P. Lovecraft, someone who I don't really know a whole heck of a lot about, but in that little essay, I know more than I did, and when someone mentions H.P. Lovecraft, I won't have the completely lost zombie look in my eyes anymore. And some of you listening to the podcast may say, well, Stephen, I can't believe you didn't know who H.P. Lovecraft was anyway. But I really didn't, and I think partly because I'm not in the horror genre as much, and he does supernatural horror is what he was really good at. But yeah, Fatale, I want to use some hyperbole and say, like, well, I'd trade Fatale for these other four books that are in my top five. But I don't want to have to put you into that situation. So you can chop up Jason and I's lists however you want. We wanted to give you a top 10, not because we expect you to start pulling 10 independent books, but to hear our arguments and explanations for why we like each of these books, and maybe you make your own top 5. You know, you pick 3 from Jason and 2 from me, or 5 from Jason and none from me, or vice versa. And that's what we wanted to give you, is that resource. There's so many different commentaries on comics. I mean, this is a golden age, a new, like, second platinum age, however you want to call it, of comics, and there's lots of commentary forums and podcasts. And as we're coming towards the end of this first season and how much I've enjoyed doing this with Jason, we are hoping that to deliver to you, I think, part of that enjoyment for us by unpacking it a little bit more than maybe you can get in a 100 or 200-word article or a blog post. Hopefully we're doing that well. So our top 10 lists for Jason: Hack Slash at number 10, Spawn at number 9, The Walking Dead at number 8, Sex Criminals at number 7, Satellite Sam at number 6, and a three-way tie: Buffy, Angel, and Faith at number 5, Star Wars at number 4, Saga at number 3, Chew at number 2, and number 1 is Fatal. For my own top 10, I have Quantum and Woody coming in at number 10, Spawn at number 9, Judge Dredd Year 1 at number 8, Captain Midnight at number 7, number 6, Exo Manowar, number 5, Star Wars, just the single Star Wars by Brian Wood, number 4, Star Trek, number 3, Judge Dredd, number 2, The Massive, and number 1, Fatal. For those of you who are just joining us, that top 10 list of our independent breakouts was by myself, Stephen Heiner, and Jason Fraser. You're listening to The Culture of Comics on the AMDG Radio Network. This is show number 18, as we're hurtling towards the end of our first season. We're going to move into the second part of our show now that we've gone through our top 10 list, and we're going to talk about some limited series, and Jason and I will talk about the ones that we've read together, and maybe we'll also take some time to talk about some ones we've read separately. So the one I want to start with, Jason, is Vertigo's The Wake, written by Scott Snyder. Have you had a chance to read this, and are you still reading it, and what are your thoughts?
I don't think I have read that one. I don't believe that I have, sir. The Wake.
Okay,
Snyder. I don't believe I have read that one.
So this is
Tell
an
me about it.
Book in Vertigo, and it's about sea creatures from tens of thousands of years ago. And the book starts by bringing you into a situation where a marine biologist, someone who is obviously out studying cetacean creatures, oceanic life, is brought to a secret high-tech facility up in the frozen north, and is brought to a platform and then brought down below the platform to a sub, which is way, way, way below the surface. They have found this creature that is emitting a very high-pitched scream. And this creature is humanoid, but it's got fins. It's got, sharp teeth. For those of you who read Aquaman from DC, it looks like something from The Trench. And if you're following the current Aquaman storyline, the people from The Trench are former Atlanteans who have just morphed into a different type of species. But who's in The Wake looks a lot like characters from The Trench in DC's Aquaman. Anyway, they have this ability to tell you through, it's almost like a siren song, but they can emit a sound to basically tell you that you are wherever you want to be. They manipulate your dreams and manipulate your consciousness. So they had this guy locked up, with chains and behind this sort of soundproof wall, and they thought they were safe. Unfortunately, this creature broke the seal, and you're treated to hit the guy who was standing guard, visualizing something that the creature allowed him to think, well, then the creature killed him and then made his escape, and then brought all of his buddies. And it's a 10-issue limited series. We're in issue number 4 or 5 right now of it. Scott Snyder is writing it. Very different from what we're used to seeing Scott Snyder do, Batman and Superman, obviously, and I think that's part of what drew me to it. I really like Scott Snyder, and I thought, well, why not? Regarding sea creatures, I like ocean stories. I like things having to do with that. There's a bit of a mystery here. There's some allusion to alien technology or a story from, you know, thousands of years ago. So we see some flashbacks back and forth between a long time ago with tribes and these creatures and present day. And there's a lot of searching. There's some subplot also with some of the characters and their relationships, but that's not the driving force. I think it just gives us some good padding and backstory.
It sounds vaguely Cthulhu-ish. It sounds a little Lovecraftian, if that makes sense. Do you find it to be like that?
It does. Well, I don't think it's as hardcore as what you're going to find in Lovecraft. It might be Lovecraft light.
I would agree with
along
you.
Those lines. It's nothing too serious, but in that way. But I wouldn't say that you would be able to judge it from issue one. I think we talked about this when we talked about Superman Wonder Woman number one a couple shows back, that it's hard to really necessarily always get a feel from a number one, but if you pick up a number one and a number two, and I would recommend if any of those story elements or the fact that you like Scott Snyder are attracted to you, maybe pick up The Wake. It's from Vertigo. I don't think it's been selling well enough that issues 1 and 2 are sold out, so you might be able to start at the beginning. I remember you had some strong words, Jason, for the Star Wars Lucas draft, what is being called the Star Wars, the original draft of Episode 4. This doesn't go any further than that. It was just an original draft of Episode 4. It's got some different characters and creatures and storylines. And I remember you saying that you didn't like it. Now, was it the art? Was it the writing? Was it just an inability to let go of what you love from Star Wars? Did you hate what was going on? Tell us about this. This is J.W.
Well,
Rinsler is the writer. He did this in consultation with George Lucas himself.
Sure. And let me take a step back, and I'm not gonna retract what I said. But I will say this. I have, based off of, that was, of course, with one of our co-hosts, guest hosts, Chad, had joined us for that show, and you guys both seemed to appreciate it. So I had only read issue 1, and I said, nope, I'm done. Stupid. So, but I did go back and buy issue 2 and 3. Because as you guys said, maybe it was just me thinking from my head, this is stupid, it's not my Star Wars, so why do I care? A little harsh, admittedly. So I have gone back and bought the other issues. I think what I won't say that it's changing my mind yet. I will say that, but you have to give it a chance. It is completely different from what you know to be Star Wars, and I think part of my hesitancy was that it was just so different and bizarre that I couldn't reconcile and make it work. I still think I'm not necessarily buying that this was an original draft of that because it's so different. Like, who made the changes? It's so very different. There's elements that are the same, but and I guess maybe it all comes down to design. I know, I mean, but there's major story elements that are just so different that I have a hard time genuinely believing that maybe they're being entirely truthful when I tell us this is what the first draft was. You know, I don't know, Stephen, you're a writer. I write occasionally. My first draft usually at least vaguely resembles what the final looks like, and this one is so different that I just don't believe it's a complete first draft. I think that it's being fleshed out a little bit. So, but it all sounds super negative. I don't want to get that impression that because I will tell you this, it's not for everyone. There's people who are going to really enjoy it. There's people who, like myself, maybe not going to enjoy it. And so I have, like I said, issue 2 and 3. I've gotten through 2. I have 2, 3 to read as well still. But I'm taking it slow because I'm trying to digest a little bit and let it sit so I can appreciate it. Because at this point, I'm really trying to make sure that I not just knee-jerk reaction going, it's stupid. You know, I don't think that's fair to our listeners or anybody who's curious about it. I will tell you, as a Star Wars fan, you're going to have to let go. Like they told me, you're going to have to let go of what you know and try to enjoy it for what it is. And basically, I think if nothing else coming out of this, I will appreciate what I have more because of that, if that makes any sense. So that's kind of where I stand, Stephen. Do you still find yourself enjoying it?
I really do. It's actually really growing on me. I had said in our show, Jason alluded to with Chad, that I had the same feelings that Jason did early on, and I just tried to suppress those feelings because I knew that this was going to be different. And if it was just simply going to be slightly different from the original Star Wars, then, you know, why buy it? It needed to be pretty radically different. Jason's right. I am a writer, but I'm primarily a nonfiction writer. I write a lot of essays and articles. And so my revisions don't nearly have the same revisions. As I know, they have in lots of different movies and fictional writings where sometimes you get a pretty thorough rewrite. So it's believable to me simply because as you're reading through these threads, you see there's a continuity in a Rebel Alliance fighting against the Galactic Empire. You have a Darth Vader, you have a Han Solo, you have a Skywalker, you have the Force, you have starships, you have all of these things are still there. They're just slightly different. They're not quite Ultimate Universe different. They're different enough. And I think that's what's been fun for me is looking at those tropes through a different lens. I know it's an 8-issue limited series, and I can just look at it and say, wow, this is what Star Wars could have been. In some ways, I'm glad it isn't, but that's because that's what I know. I only know the Star Wars of episodes 4, 5, and 6. That's what I believe in. This was what it could have been, and I definitely think there are plot points that are weaker, and I'm really glad there was a rewrite. But it's also something sometimes helpful to go back and see, what was the source material? What did this originally draw from? And so, yes, I think it was pretty heavily rewritten. I think not necessarily with Lucas, which tells you that thank God that George Lucas allowed himself to be edited, because otherwise we might have gotten this instead of the Star Wars we did have. And I just wish that someone was able to do that with Peter Jackson so he wouldn't be able to take a 200, 300-page novel and turn it into three-hour movies.
No, that's nonsense.
So
I agree. Oh, man.
You can read The Hobbit in the time it would take you to watch the first couple of movies. So Peter Jackson, because of his success, didn't have anybody editing him. George Lucas, because 4, 5, and 6 were a success, and they were seen to be his, that he was able to go back and do 1, 2, and 3 the way that he did. If you look at 1, 2, and 3 episodes of Star Wars, they're a lot more similar to what's going on in the Star Wars. In terms of the weakness of some of the themes, than 4, 5, and 6. So I actually think the Star Wars is a good reminder to us that 4, 5, and 6 might have been just as bad as 1, 2, and 3 had Lucas not been edited. So there's lots of different reasons to read this, but be prepared to challenge yourself and be prepared to step out way outside your comfort zone, because you will not necessarily like this at first. If you're a big Star Wars fan, like Jason and I are Star Wars fans, you might really hate this at first, but give it a chance. Jason, a miniseries that we both had a chance to read at least a little bit earlier this year was Harbinger Wars. I know that's way behind us now, but I just thought you might just do a 1 or 2 minute Reader's Digest as someone who's sort of an outsider to the Valiant universe and to Harbinger in general, to talk about how you liked it in relation to something you're very comfortable and familiar with, which is X-Men from the Marvel universe. So somebody's interested in Harbinger. Was Harbinger Wars a good introduction into that universe for you?
I got to tell you, with Harbinger Wars, I understand that this is a series, a book, that you enjoy a great deal. And because of that, because I want to like what you like and try to understand, I think we both do that. I'm trying to give it a shot. I just think it's so very different and yet not different. Goodness, it's difficult to explain. Yes, I do enjoy it. I will say that it's probably not one that, as you saw by my list, probably not going to be one that I pick up consistently. I would be more likely to pick up, for example, Quantum and Woody, because it doesn't seem to require as much commitment for me, because I know next to nothing about the Valiant Universe overall. I'm aware of who the characters are. I'm aware of Harada and what he is, and I'm there's the moment where he pulls out, I don't remember if this was in Harbinger Wars or one of the other books, I think it was in Harbinger Wars, where he pulls out the dude's brain. That's brutal. That's cool. I kind of like in this case with Harbinger Wars, it is kind of X-Men-y a little bit. I believe the Harbingers all focus on psychic powers more than anything. Correct me if I'm wrong, Stephen. But I think it's all about psionic or psychic abilities, as opposed to where you see X-Men with some crazy stuff, claws and fish boys and stuff like that. So it's a little bit more. It's not an assault on your senses to see some weird looking characters. Everybody looks normal-ish. But I like the presentation with the bad guy, and I guess whether he is a bad guy or not. I don't think he sees himself as a bad guy sometimes. But Harada being the or Anne. What do they call it, Omega? An Omega level? Something like that. He has telepathy, telekinesis, other stuff, right? He has all kinds of powers. Bringing all these guys together, and, I don't know, I enjoy it, but I don't know that I enjoy it enough to jump all on with it. Like I said, there's elements, there's every once in a while I'll get a panel or two that really jump out at me. Like I said, the brain one where he knocks out the dude's brain, pretty cool. I don't remember if that was in Harbinger Wars or the actual Harbinger book. Do you remember which one that was, Stephen?
No, it was in Harbinger Wars. It was pretty rough.
Yeah, it was pretty sweet. And so there's elements that I like. I mean, there's lots of things about it that I like. I am not completely on board with it yet. I'm still trying it out here and there. And so I don't have all the Harbinger War issues either. I haven't picked – that's another one much like – what was the one earlier I jump in and out of? What am I thinking? I forgot already. But Harbinger, I mean, I jump in and out of
– Quantum and Woody?
Quantum and Woody, I haven't jumped in and out of. I just enjoy. No, that one I straight up enjoy. that's the only Valiant book that I read consistently, as a matter of fact. I read several issues of Exo Manowar. I am reading Harbinger War stuff, because it's all the big Valiant storyline, right? Going into Unity. Unity! So I kind of want to be on board when that stuff happens, because I think in a lot of ways the Valiant Universe is not afraid to take chances that the bigger publishers wouldn't take. Case in point, the brain-punching scene. Not just the violence, but the finality of how quickly he takes out a character, I think, was very cool to me. It's something that they're willing to risk characters. We can probably assume that the major characters are safe, but some of the ancillary characters are probably not very safe. They get on pretty quick. And I'm fascinated by Harada. I think he's a great character. I don't know why I find myself gravitating more and more to bad guys. So if they're well written and well designed, anyway, he works really well. And so I think I like him more than any of the main characters, any of the heroes, quote unquote, from it. I don't know. I mean, as a fair weather fan, I can appreciate elements, but I'm not on board completely yet. But I think overall, quite enjoyable and very different from what you might see in the Marvel Universe or the DC Universe, but on some level similar. It's really difficult for me to put into words, because I think they take more chances with the story. The storyline goes further than some of the other books that the other companies put out. And so I find myself enjoying it more and more, but I'm not reading it consistently yet. But I do like the character Harada. Big fan.
Fair enough. With that, I'm going to pivot into three books by someone that I enjoy reading quite a bit. He was the author behind the original Ultimate Comics Ultimates, and that's Mark Millar. Three specific series from this year, I think, Kick-Ass 3, The Secret Service, and Jupiter's Legacy. Jupiter's Legacy is one that I'm currently reading. Jason, I know you said you had been reading Kick-Ass. I don't know if we both had read The Secret Service, but why don't you start with Kick-Ass? I think you had said that you you were saying sayonara to this book. Tell us a little bit about why you are saying sayonara and what it was about.
Well, clearly I was mistaken because I jumped back into it again. I have a problem. That I have a problem. I want to deeply to let something go, and sometimes I can't. I'm like, well, I already come so far, you know? I'm like, I've already read so much. I can't stop now. That's crazy. And then, unfortunately, I have fallen back in. So Kick-Ass, many people probably just familiar with this from the movie standpoint. I will say that if the movie itself, the series, follows the movie fairly closely.
With a few elements that were ridiculously added to the movie. I'm sure it wasn't a Mark Millar idea to throw the jetpack into the first movie. pretty god-awful idea. But I will say that the Kick-Ass series, it had a great start. Basically, it's a real-world tale of a superhero. A kid, a comic book fan like us, this is if Steven and I wanted to decide we wanted to be superheroes and went out and tried to start some crime fighting on the streets, and how badly it would probably go for us, let's be honest. We would probably have, I think on his first adventure out, he'd get stabbed and shoved in front of a car. And that kind of gives him a little bit of a superpower because he doesn't really feel pain much anymore. He's kind of numb as a result of his injuries. I think what is interesting about Mark Millar and the Kick-Ass series in general is just how violent it is and how rough it can be. It doesn't pull any punches. He, as in Kick-Ass 2, the second series, which a movie was made for this year, I don't know, I didn't get to see the movie yet, but I know I'm willing to bet they didn't go as far as the comic series goes, but just to give you an idea of how far it goes, the Red Mist from the first movie, the superhero son of the supervillain son of the mobster from the first movie, changes his name to the, and I'll say the MF-er. He changes his name to that. That's a pretty wicked supervillain name, by the way. But the MF-er, I'm going to call him Red Mist because I don't want to slip up. So Red Mist, under his new identity, which is basically gimp gear, sexual domination gear, where you're wearing, goes out and he goes as far as to get Kick-Ass's father thrown in jail and then have his father murdered. He then sexually assaults Kick-Ass's girlfriend, blows up Kick-Ass's father's funeral, and basically just runs roughshod over these lame superheroes. And the book itself is not afraid to go very far. And Kick-Ass, Hit Girl herself, I think the best character out of the series, also hyper-violent, murders casually, murders very violently. Kind of odd, kind of scary to think that the youngest character in the series is probably the most dangerous. Currently in the Kick-Ass 3 series, she is in prison, in the federal pen. I mean, I don't know how. I mean, it's a lot of suspension disbelief here to say, they put this 12-year-old girl into the federal penitentiary with all the dudes. And she's not running to prison, so she is not surprising. She's running to prison. Kick-Ass is trying to get his little superhero league back together, but I think he's going to have a civil war a la Marvel Universe very soon with some of the stuff that's going on there. So it's pretty much about the failure of a superhero over and over and over again, and then Hit Girl being just as badass as she always is. So I said in one of the prior shows I'm considering dropping that, and it's not because it's bad. It's it just doesn't feel like we're gaining any ground. I don't know if you're reading it and feel the same, Stephen, or not, but we seem to get violence for violence's sake, and as much as I like gore and horror and violence, if it's not for a reason, I don't find myself really getting into it. If it's just there to be there, I begin to question why am I even reading this? So I gave it another chance. Admittedly, I went and bought the latest issue again, but still not completely back on board. I'm still you're on notice, Kick-Ass. I don't know what that means coming from me, because you're on notice. I'm going to drop you for a month and come back again. But it's a good series. The first two were really good, and the Hit Girl series are really good. I think I just have an issue with the third series being more of the same.
And there it is. The second Mark Millar book that we want to talk about is The Secret Service, which is being made into a movie with the guy who did X-Men First Class. It was a 6-issue miniseries by Mark Millar. Did you have a chance to pick this up at all, Jason?
Portions of it. I actually do want to read the rest of it. I have not read the final chapters of it. Did you read it all?
I did. I read all of them.
Does it end well?
To me, it starts with Mark Hamill being kidnapped because this man who wants to take over the world wants to have all of these cool people there, like Ridley Scott and Mark Hamill and all of that. So some sort of funny parts to it. It's a young kid who has sort of a rough upbringing in London, wrong side of the tracks. His uncle is part of the Secret Service. And it's sort of something it's alluded to. It's even higher than MI5. Or, you know, it's something more along the lines of Bond, MI6, 007 kind of thing. So if you like spy stuff, if you like Bourne Identity kind of things with a Mark Millar twist, and keep in mind, in Mark Millar productions, people get killed all the time. So if you want to hold on to a favorite character and not have him whacked, do not read any Mark Millar books ever. But being made into a movie, if you want to be the cool hipster that knew about the Secret Service before it was made into, before everyone else knew about it, then go and pick up the 6 issues of the Secret Service now. Currently, Mark Millar and I'm sorry.
I just think I'm very curious when they make this movie if they're actually gonna cast Mark Hamill as Mark Hamill for his death scene. I think that I wouldn't be like on board with that.
Mark Hamill returns to the movie screen. I would love it.
It would be pretty awesome. And you know what I liked about this series, and again I didn't get to finish it, but I did. I found that it had I don't know. Did you read the Wanted series?
I did not read Wanted.
Oh, you should. It's fantastic, but a little more fantastical than this. But it has elements. It felt a little bit like Wanted in various portions, and so I liked it. I didn't get to finish it yet, though. I think I ended up with issue 4, something like that. So I am taking my time with that one. I'm probably going to end up picking it all up again in a big trade paperback instead, or buying it digitally, which is, I know, the enemy of our show, but buying it on my iPad so I can read it. But I think it's he's done some cool stuff with that, and he has elements of Wanted in Secret Service. He has elements of Nemesis. I don't know if you read that series. There's elements of all of the stories. In every story he has some of the same elements, but I enjoyed what I read so far. I have not finished it yet. That's kind of one that I go to when I get a moment, pick it up. But again, I know that now that it's done, I'll probably just go ahead and buy it all together. Instead of going and trying to hunt down the back issues, because I don't have much success with that man. But
with the number of books you pull, I have no idea how the heck you would keep up with the with back issues too.
No, that's what I tend to go, and I'll be honest, I tend to go to the digital side for that kind of stuff. I mean, no, when it's something that's come and gone, I don't really want to go and hunt it down. I can have it at my fingertips through my iPad. I can say, well, I'll give that a chance. And that's how I try out some books, too, sometimes. I say, well, you know, I don't want to go out and hunt it down and buy it. I'll just buy the first issue digitally, and I did that with The Massive, as a matter of fact. That's how I kind of, if I want to give something a try, I'll do it that way. I'm interested to talk about the next one, though. I know you're going with the next one, so please proceed.
Yeah, Jupiter's Legacy is still going on right now. Mark Millar is writing. Frank Quitely, who you may remember from All-Star Superman, one of my top 5 favorite DC graphic novels of all time. Jupiter's Legacy starts with telling us that these sort of idealistic young men and women went to an island to learn about its secrets on a map somewhere. The people telling them, say, there's no island, where your map tells you there's an island. Something happens on the island where they come back with superpowers. They have a bunch of kids to populate the world. They're sort of freelance superheroes, and some of them act like child TV stars. They start doing drugs. They are irresponsible. They go clubbing, all the things that superheroes are not supposed to do, and, of course, the parents are disapproving and try to run things. They even have consultations with the government. A very massive turn happens, and I feel like you can. We're only in issue 3, so you can go back and pick up 1, 2, and 3. So I don't exactly want to spoil what's going on, but it's a pretty massive plot point change, which changes the entire orientation of the book going forward. So you get intro to this universe, what's going on. Something huge happens in the third issue, and what we're going to see forward is 13 years after, I think 11 or 13 years after this major happening, and what happened next. And it's tough. It's a really, I was shocked by what happened. It was tough to watch, even in a comic format. And have you been following this all along?
Oh, yeah. And it's a shame that we can't talk about it, because it does. You think you have an idea of how this is going to go, and it does. It turns it on its head. So I almost feel like the first 3 issues are a setup for the real story. I mean, obviously that's the case. The title, Jupiter's Legacy, makes me think, of course, that the legacy begins now. This is like a 3-issue prelude to the real story. And it's, yeah, gosh, I wish we could talk about it. But I agree that we shouldn't, because it is a huge, huge, huge game changer for the book in general. And it's a well-written book, which is what I think is the best part. It really is a great story so far. It's very unique. And it's, I think, what did they say? It's going to be done in, it's 12, 10, 10 or 12 issues? How many issues is it going to be altogether? 12, something like that?
That feels right. Mark Millar never does huge, long productions.
That's still pretty long for him, especially considering that these have been so far apart as release. I will tell you that if you're looking for this, they're all going to be back issues. There's not going to currently there's not even a new issue out since September, right? Something like that.
I think so.
It's been a while. I think. I don't know anymore. My months merged together, but it has been. It feels like it's been a while. But yeah, I mean, man, issue 3 alone is worth the price of admission. In order to get to issue 3, you got to go through 1 and 2. You really just have to. So, absolutely get on board now. It's early. It's not releasing at what I would call a regular schedule, so you're not going to be having. This isn't a huge commitment for you, but it's something that, it's got Millar, it's got Mark Millar that written all over it. I mean, all of his stories have certain elements that can change things. And man, issue 3 is crazy.
We're getting kind of closer to the end of our show, so I want to bring this to a wrap-up, and I want to talk about a few series that I've had on my mind. Ask Jason if you've had any series on your mind, and then we will call it a day. We'll start with Planet of the Apes Cataclysm, which was an event that ended this year, but I think Boom did a special that tied together both the Planet of the Apes Cataclysm and the original Planet of the Apes storyline together in it was called a giant. It was sort of an annual, and it brought the series to a conclusion. I don't know what Boom is going to do with Planet of the Apes going forward, but I really enjoy this, as I said, as someone who is an aficionado of the original Planet of the Apes films, someone who likes the new Planet of the Apes films as well, and who just likes the moral dilemmas and questions in that universe. Boom has provided something worthwhile. As I've said before, maybe not the best art, but some interesting stories, and we'll see what happens with it. RoboCop Last Stand, which is a Frank Miller production, they are definitely gearing up for the movie because Last Stand ends right around when the RoboCop movie is going to be released. So I think they're trying to build some momentum for it, and people like me who love Robo are hopping on. Jason, I don't know if you are reading RoboCop Last Stand, are you?
I haven't, but I am aware, and correct me if I'm wrong, but my understanding of it is that it's basically the original, the proper RoboCop, isn't it? That's the original script or something along those lines?
This is the original RoboCop 2. It's what he wanted. This is what Frank Miller wanted for RoboCop 2.
That surprises me because, I mean, RoboCop 2 I still liked. RoboCop 3 was god-awful. I was thinking, oh, God, they're going to fix RoboCop 3? Cool. No, I'm not reading it yet. But
I think this is a bit more loyal to, let's say, the look and feel of RoboCop 1.
Violent and
yes. No, I'm sorry. Hold on. I'm getting these mixed up. There was a graphic novel that was released. I'm sorry. You were right, Jason. There's a graphic novel that was released that I am reading concurrently with this. But you're right. RoboCop Last Stand is what was supposed to be RoboCop 3. I stand corrected. So if you are a RoboCop fan, if you're excited about the new movie that's coming out, it's a great way to kind of get back into the character, get back into the head of Alex J. Murphy, and maybe bring back a little childhood memory. Go Robo. And one that I didn't announce as an ongoing series but has crept into my pull list at the end of this year has been Battlestar Galactica, which is put up by Dynamite, which I always want to pronounce Dynamite. And it is the first story arc started with time travel, but we're at issue 5 now, and we're out of that. And it was actually a good use of it. It was in this alternate universe, the humans were really beat down by the Cylons. And the way that the story plays out, they come back, the people who are in the Battlestar Galactica universe we know, which I should say is original OG Battlestar Galactica, not a few years ago Battlestar Galactica. They come back a little bit more encouraged. The people who are in the universe in which the Cylons are really in charge, they go back a bit more strengthened. And the idea of, you know, little things, the butterfly effect of one character or a group of people making decisions, changing history, is a lot more cleanly dealt with here in this 5-issue arc than we've seen in some of our Marvel storylines. So we talked about those Mark Millar stories, Kick-Ass, Secret Service, and Jupiter's Legacy. I also mentioned Planet of the Apes coming to a conclusion with Boom and RoboCop Last Stand getting us ready for the movies. I'm interested to see if Battlestar Galactica continues running on Dynamite. If it does, it will be added to my pull list. Jason, any other limited series that you wanted to talk about?
Steve, I don't think so. There was one that I really have enjoyed quite a bit, both as a series and I don't think this classifies as limited because it's going to end in 2015, so it's already like issue 27. It's limited because we know what's going to end, but it's still going on right now, and that's something that's the Fables series and the Ferrest series, which are kind of an interesting take on what we know of our Fables, our Snow White, our Big Bad Wolf, those kind of things. That's actually going to be going on for a few years, so I guess that's not a limited series. So I guess short answer, no.
Okay, fair enough. Well, we've covered quite a bit today. Jason and I went through our top 10 lists for the independent publishers, Image, Dark Horse, IDW, Valiant, Vertigo, Dynamite, and Boom. And we talked about books from every single one of those publishers. We also then talked about some limited series, and we hope that this has helped you be a little bit more informed about your comic choices going into next calendar year and for us next season for the radio show. We encourage you again, we have our Facebook like contest. We're trying to get to 30 likes. Again, we started this rather late. AMDG Radio as a network had a Facebook page, and only recently did it mandate that individual shows would have their own Facebook pages as well. So we know we have more than 15 listeners. We actually have hundreds of listeners in five different countries. But we know we might want to nudge and persuade you to like our Facebook page. I know listening to a podcast, you're not always in a position to go like a page, but please go do that. You'll be entered into a contest to get a free trade paperback of your choice. If you go to our show page on blogtalkradio.com/ANDG and click on today's show description, you'll see a link to a survey. Fill out that survey. You'll also be entered into a contest that will give us some feedback into what you've liked that we're doing, give us some constructive criticism on what we can do better next season, and you'll also be entered into a contest. You can see that link also at our Twitter feed, twitter.com/cultureofcomics. So I've plugged our Facebook contest, I've plugged our survey contest, and I've told you about Twitter. As always, happy to have you here listening with us. We appreciate your support this season. Next week, we will be counting down DC, and we may have one more show for you this season. We're working on it. It'll be a really fun thing. We haven't really done anything like it this season. It'd be a great way to finish. So we're working on pulling that together, but I can't say too much about it now. I can say that next Sunday at 6 p.m. Central, we will definitely be back here to do the final show, regularly scheduled show for this season on DC Comics. Jason, any last thoughts before we head out of here?
No, looking forward to both of those shows for the rest of the season. I think it's going to be good. It's a good show today. So thank you again, Stephen.
All right. Take care, and we will see you next time.